Welcome to the ThinkSpace podcast with myself, John Stoskowski, and Danny Massaro. Our goal with this podcast is a simple one. We discuss and dissect a prescient topic, issue, or theme that we think is interesting and might help us humans better understand why we think, feel, and do what we do. If you'd like to engage in these types of conversations too, you can check out thinkspace.academy for a unique cohort-based course that will help you think critically and live authentically. Hope you enjoy the episode. Right, Danny, we're going to flip it a little bit this episode, right? Slightly, at least the introduction that I normally do. So we're going to be talking about energy and something called bioenergetics, more specifically, and how that, or the role that that plays basically in how we think, how we feel, how we live, just how it influences our lives. And the reason that we're going to talk about this is I've done some work on it previously, but you thought it was really relevant coming from the Nietzsche podcast that we last did. So we talked about will to power in the last episode. And part of that we touched on a little bit, just how Nietzsche was quite big on the body being the mind, and there's not really been much separation between the two. You are your body, you're not your mind. Yes. So I'm just going to get you to lead us into why you thought this was maybe a particularly good topic to follow on for that, and why we think it's really quite a practical, helpful thing for people to consider.
Yeah, well, firstly, I know it's a really good area for you because you're the expert type thing on this. This is a real interesting area for me as someone who doesn't know much about it, but has listened to you, and you've really helped me with it in my life, like with my diet and my moods at times, and you know, looking after my body. So obviously last podcast we were looking at the how Nietzsche was sort of saying that the mind is produced by the body, and he was very, very big on saying that there are underlying forces going on. So this is back in the 1800s, you know, there are underlying forces going on in the body that are driving the passions and driving the instincts, in other words, and your moods, these moods you find yourself in. And what he said, and they are linked to nutrition. And they are linked to energy, like the energetic state, the will inside all your organism and all your cells and all these, you know, these processes that are going on in your body. Or, you know, because you don't always feel them as much, and we've promoted the mind to be this all-seeing, you know, the mind's the all-seeing, all-powerful computer that runs everything. He was like, no, you've got to remember that the mind is only produced by these forces in the body, and they are still going on all the time. So when you talk to me about that, in a way, all we really are is energy, you know, we are cells, you know, and I thought I'd kick off with this quote. I know you'd written a paper on it as well, applied to coaching, and I found it really useful because you'd mentioned that if you're in good metabolic energetic states, it's so much easier to coach well. And I've really resonated with that. I really resonated with the fact that if I'm sleeping well and I'm not stressed and I'm eating the right foods for me, and I'm, you know, not getting too much wrong in me, and I'm having the things I kind of need to eat for me, then I always know that I'm on form in my thinking. And I'm more flexible in it. And when I'm not that way, so I'm really interested in the physiological sort of biological nutritional underpinning of all of that. So you'll talk about this man a lot, a man called Ray Peet, who you'll introduce a bit. But he said, as I read in your paper, that there is no more important concept to understand in life than the nature of biological energy, with thought, growth, movement, and every philosophical and practical issue impacted by it. So there you go. Why?
First thing we need to get clear, you said, oh, you're an expert in this. There's no way I'm an expert in this. It's just
to me.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, I don't want people to think that we're
no, kind you're of not. Yeah, I get that, yeah.
It's just a topic that I really got interested in for my own health reasons, really, like 6-7 years ago, and just got more and more into it, researched more around it, read more around it, and just found it really, really impactful in my own life, really. So that's why I got into it. So yeah, I would say I know more about it than most people, but I definitely don't see myself as an expert.
No.
But when we're talking about energy, that's maybe the first thing to clarify. Anyone who did like GCSE or like A-level biology and those kind of science topics at school probably remembers that original diagram of like the cell in the body where it's like split down, and then everyone's pretty familiar with the mitochondria being a part of the cell. Now that's really what all we're getting at is we are basically made up of trillions and trillions of those cells, and the mitochondria are really the powerhouse of those cells in terms of they take the food that we eat and it basically goes through a mitochondrial process, and then it eventually gets converted into ATP, which is basically energy that we run on. If you don't have ATP running through your body, you're basically just, well, you're not alive. You're just a bag of bones and skin and stuff. You're no longer a living organism. So that energy, when we're talking energy in this context, is literally the stuff that keeps us alive.
So is that like the electricity in a way?
In a way, yeah. And I think where a lot of people maybe get confused with this stuff is when they're talking about energy, they tend to think about calories. So they think about, well, I've eaten some food, I've got some energy on board. When really, that food is just fuel.
Right.
Which can potentially be converted into energy in that cellular metabolism.
So when you see somebody who looks well, you know, when you say like the beaming, they look beaming and glowing, you know, and they're vibrant, for example. That's like someone who's got good energy, is it?
The epitome for me of energy, when you just think of a kid, think of like a 3, 4, 5-year-old kid,
right,
who is just buzzing to be there and be alive. They're inquisitive. Everything is new to them. They're just loving being in the world and discovering new stuff. They've got energy to burn in terms of they're physically active, and they can just, they're like a Duracell bunny, aren't they? They can go and go and go, and then eventually they'll hit that, bosh, I need a nap now.
So you can see with children, and when they're in them states, that's what's driving them more than they say that. Obviously they haven't got a necessarily a conscious thing, but the abundance of energies, as we all know as parents, is driving those children, a bit like puppies as well in dogs and things. It's, you know, we see it in animals. The energy is driving the mood, which is driving the behavior. And what you see when you get older, we tend to relegate that and put more, no, it's all about your mind space first. And if you can be bothered, you'll do it. And if you can't be bothered, you won't do it. But actually what we're saying is that even as an adult, it's really important to try and get yourself in a state where that there's an abundance of energy constantly going through your body if you can.
In a way, that's what aging is. So as the example there of a 3, 4, 5-year-old kid, that's basically when our metabolism is at its peak. We're in our peak metabolic health in that phase. And as we age, and this is what you'll see in people that just, you know, in your own life, the people who age the best tend to have the best metabolism for longer.
So what's metabolism?
Good metabolism, I mean, you're basically creating energy. You're converting the fuel that you're taking in through food, and that's been converted in your cells into ATP, which is giving you an abundance of energy to attack life with, essentially. And the reason that we age is because those functions and processes essentially start breaking down and not working as well as we go through life. So that's why, again, the kid is the peak of that metabolic scenario, because everything's working so well. It hasn't had enough time to basically start getting broken down and things getting out of whack.
What's interesting, I know as adults, like a lot of adults, they will take drugs, won't they? And they'll take stimulants, and they'll hijack the energy system for this energy system, whether it's coffee, a lot of coffee, fine, or whatever, give them cocaine, they'll take alcohols, all these different types of things. But then the trouble with that is, and a lot of creative things have been done, haven't they, on high and on drugs and all this stuff. But the trouble with that is there's this crash of energy. So in a way, you're cheating the system. You're not got this natural, you know, so let's say you've worked all week, or you're an athlete and you've killed yourself, you know, and then you sort of like crash after a tournament or an event, or it's Friday night and you've done the hardest week ever at work. You go out and maybe need to, because you're knackered, you've been busy and you're not eating well enough, that's when you might have to go out and take drugs or take drink and alcohol, sort of cheat it, and then feel really terrible. And over the years, that gets you down.
Yeah, coffee, I think, is the classic one. Everyone jokes about it, don't they? You know, say you've got an early meeting or something, or you've got to be somewhere, like, oh, I can't function until I've had, you know, 3 double espressos or something. And that's because they're so low on energy first thing when they get up on a morning that they need that like kickstart to kind of really fire them up, just to get to a baseline of right now I'm ready to attack the day, or just get on the train to go to work and that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm not pro or against coffee. I think coffee can be a useful tool for different things, but it's probably a good example of, so when we're talking about metabolism, that aspect of you're creating ATP, you're creating that efficiently, you'd refer to that as more of like a thyroid-driven metabolism. And that's what you want to be aiming at. Oxidative phosphorylation, that's the technical term for that energy creation in the cell. And that's driven by your thyroid. Now, a backup system to that, so if you're not creating that energy properly within your organism, you tend to get that stress system kicking in, which, you know, for good reason in nature, that you need that backup system. You're not going to have abundant food and conditions all the time. So you're going to have that backup system kicking in now.
Is that like me getting up at 3:30 for Leo this morning? I couldn't hardly sleep. And after 30 minutes, I felt really awake.
Yeah. But it's stress driven. You know, that's, and people can feel good and they can feel energetic and they can feel like, right, I'm ready to go. I'm wired. Let's have it. But that's often that stress system that's driving it. So it's adrenaline and it's cortisol and it's those stress hormones that are kicking in that, if we want to think about it in terms of like evolution and stuff, they served a purpose. That stress system basically kept us alive and helped us get to the point we've got to as human beings, because you needed them in a jam. So if a lion jumps out in front of you, adrenaline, cortisol kicks in, poof, and you can just sprint away and get away.
You're wired. That's that wired feeling, isn't it? That you're jacked up on your own drugs is what you're sort of saying there.
People are familiar with that tired but wired. You get that feeling where you can't really sleep, you can't switch off. A lot of athletes, after they've played, say, a game on an evening, you know, they can't get to sleep till 4 or 5 in the morning because they're just wired on all that adrenaline and cortisol that's still flowing through the system. Now, it's not that that's bad. It clearly serves a purpose. It's there and it has good reason to be there. The issue is if that becomes your metabolism 24/7, so you're just running on that adrenal system constantly, and that's what you would call anaerobic glycolysis. So that's that lactic acid type feeling. Everyone's had that if they've done exercise where you hit the wall and you just feel that lactic acid built up in your system. That's really quite a reductive, stressful state. So if you're not producing energy properly through that thyroid pathway and you're in that stress state, that's where you're going to get into trouble. That's when you see things like your skin starts breaking down, your hair might start falling out, all these things that people go, oh, it's just aging because you've been running on this stress system for a little bit too long. It's a reductive state rather than it being an energetic, abundant state. It helps you kind of grow. So yeah, that's a little bit of that difference between the two. Now, why I thought this was relevant and why I wrote that paper that you talked about was the most energy intensive organ by far in your body is your brain. And it's something like, you'll hear different figures, but it's roughly around 20% of the energy that the body uses is used by the brain, which is weighing above everything else. So it's the most sensitive organ then to energy deprivation. So if you're not creating energy efficiently and your brain is now becoming deprived of energy, that's when I was saying, you know, things like cognitive function, your ability to think critically, you know, to have an open mind, to use your imagination, to be curious, all those things are energy intensive processes.
Well, what struck me, we did the Psychologically Rich Life 2 episodes ago. I know for a fact that we've set our lives up, you know, by design, so fortunately, whatever, and so on, but we've got more time on our hands and so on, and our critical sort of creativity and me doing finishing my PhD off and you doing all these new things and the courses and the podcasts and all the new learning you've done, you're just loving it, aren't you? You know, you've got all that room to do it. In your paper, there was a point you made about that, like, even judges, they found that with judges in Israel, I think it was Kahneman, you quote Daniel Kahneman's stuff, 2011, that they were saying that judges were far more lenient when they'd eaten and they were in the morning time and they were all feeling like, you know, they were far more likely to see shades of grey and complexity when people were asking for extensions or maybe a bit of parole. Whereas at the end of the day, when they were struggling and, you know, not that this is, again, the Nietzsche thing of the underlying force was like just going, oh, no, mate, you're guilty. You just got to carry on. Because they didn't know it, but their whole outlook had changed because of the underlying energy processes. And you wrote, it's not a great stretch to conclude that coaches in a similarly compromised metabolic state will be much less likely to able to think creatively and critically. Instead, they might avoid complexity and ambiguity and instead seek out and prefer definitive or absolutist messages and simple single answers to actual complex issues and questions. And I think that is brilliant because I can really resonate with that. You know, like when you're winning and you're eating well and life's going well and you're on a roll and you're in the flow, and therefore you're not tired, and then you're not probably having as much late nights, and you're not doing as much partying and drinking. And it's like everything goes in a good way, and because you're feeling good, you don't need to necessarily, I don't know, you know what I mean, you don't get stressed because you're not stressed. So it kind of tips left rather than tipping right. And I was watching a bit of Jurgen Klopp this season with someone like Guardiola. At the moment, Klopp literally looks like a bit contorted and stressed in his face and his skin and his teeth and his eyes. He doesn't look like the same Willy Wonka guy, you know, who was around. He looks angry, and because obviously, relatively, they're going through a stressful time at the moment. Whereas Man City just seems to be like going, can't go wrong. Guardiola looks like he's like a lighthouse. His eyes are bright, skin shining, he looks good looking. Really, I can really resonate strongly with that in terms of maybe you can see one's running on the adrenal backup energy production, and the other one's maybe looks like they're just in a little bit more like natural flow of real energy and healthy. So I think that quote you said there about that, like, you're not as prickly, you're not as spiky, you don't want things sorted quickly, you're not up yourself as much, you're not as snappy, you know, in your job. And that's obvious, isn't it? You know, even getting up with Leo this morning, half three, you know, you're there. And because I'm abundant with energy, because like I'll go walking in the day, I try and eat all the good foods, I'm not stressed, I've not got a job to get to, which is all by design. You know, I turn things down and I know how important my walks are and my fresh air and my sunlight and all the things you've told me, you know, eating, try and eat foods that are good for me and get sleep. Then I can cope with the bits of stress a bit better. The backup can kick in as appropriately and then kick out. I can kind of go, oh, I almost in a way know I'm on my backup system, and then nip it in the bud before I use too much of it.
You can get like a self-fulfilling cycle going as well. So say, like, you're using the example of Klopp there, clearly the position he's in is quite stressful, he's getting more attention, you know, that stuff ain't going right, he's stressed anyway. So if that's going to be creating more stress, but then if his actual just underlying metabolic state is causing stress as well, you soon get into this kind of cycle of it's almost never ending. Whereas you'd want it to almost be like, you know, because you're in such a good energetic state, that stress comes and you're just better able to deal with it. So the stress itself doesn't become more of a stressor. A word that I was going to use there, for example, which we might do our next episode on, after we had like a listener request, didn't we, for talking about humility. If you think back to when I gave the example of kids, kids are just massively intellectually humble. You know, they don't think they know, everything's new to them, and they just kind of, it's fresh and it's exciting and it's kind of invigorating. Whereas maybe Klopp, people are really questioning his methods, they're questioning his selections. They're asking, like, has he been there too long? Is this, you know, was this kind of written in the stars? It always happens after 7 years, I think. So those kind of questions, you become, if you're in a reduced metabolic state, those questions become quite difficult. And you kind of think, no, that you don't know what you're on about. I've got the answers. This is right. That's wrong. And you're a lot surer in your stance. You become less humble in a way because you don't have the energy to kind of give to interacting it in that way, which was when you were talking about that quote that you gave. So for me, one of the causes of that through this pathway, so if your adrenaline's up, your cortisol's up, that stress pathway is in there. Another thing that's going to go up massively is serotonin. Most people have got it into their heads that serotonin is this happy hormone, and it's, you know, that's what you need more of it. And people go on antidepressants, which crazily gives people more serotonin because the paradigm is that that's good. Whereas this bioenergetic view would be, no, serotonin is a stress hormone and you need to reduce that as much as possible. And dopamine is more of that hormone that is linked to, you know, humility, open-mindedness, passion to get out there and explore, creativity, all those positive cognitive traits that we want are much more aligned with dopamine than serotonin. Now, clearly there's good and bad to both. Anything in excess is usually not a good thing, is it? But I think that's what's going on with, I was trying to make the point for coaches, if you're in that stress state, so those backup systems are kicking in and your stress hormones are up and serotonin's up, I think that puts you in very much like that hibernation phase. You're like a bear before winter. It'll just like go and eat as much as it can, get fat, basically make itself diabetic, and then it just goes and sleeps for, you know, 3 or 4 months in the dark. You see that in people. So when they're in a low metabolic state, they become very closed-minded, but also closed to new information. You become kind of insular, and you don't want to really interact with new stuff. You don't want, everything just looks too complex and threatening. Anyone questioning you becomes a threat rather than a chance to learn or maybe change your mind or something. So you become almost like this hibernating animal where you just want to get warm, everyone to leave you alone.
Yeah, put the Sky Sports on.
Yeah, shut yourself away. Just kind of really become...
veg out.
Yeah, into yourself.
Don't challenge me with any thinking.
Yeah, so that I think serotonin plays a huge role in it, which is very much linked to some of the things we've talked about. And it makes sense, doesn't it? If you're running low on energy, why would you want to kind of engage with new information, new ideas? All that to you is just going, I haven't got the energy for this. Just tell me what to think. I don't want to have to come up with my own opinions on this. Maybe I am just sat with Sky News on watching that and they're telling me all this even more threatening stuff. And it's like, oh my God, the world's so threatening.
Yeah.
And you just don't want to have to do with it. You outsource any thinking to maybe a guru or someone who's there and going, well, tell you what, you just follow me because I've got the answers. Don't listen to them. Everything's complex, but I'll make it simple for you. You just follow me. And that's where you get, you know, ultimately you can get at the extreme end, cults forming and stuff like that.
So you get people like, they'll go, no, I like this diet, and they play with it and adapt it to themselves. And then someone goes, the other person goes, no, I do this diet, and this diet's answered everything for me. Or yoga, everything I do, that's me, I'm fine. I can carry on with all the backup system, do 1 hour of yoga a week, that's fixed it, you know, but it's totally the wrong way of doing it. Rather than someone who's maybe practiced yoga for years and years gently and understands it's part of many other things that just keeps them flowing and energetic and calm and dopamine. Now, what's interesting, we've talked to Nietzsche and Simone de Beauvoir. Nietzsche's thing about not being the lion too much and returning to the child state, right, which is about, you know, relaxing and fun and all of this stuff. And de Beauvoir saying, don't become the serious person, right? Try and get more towards the giver, the artist, the passionate, you know, a bit less than the serious. Still everything, ultimately, will the freedom of others and join in and so on. They didn't know about energetics and so on, although they alluded to these underlying things.
I think they were onto it.
They were onto it there. In coaching, in practical terms, like when you're around, do you think that, like, when you hang around with people in groups and they're funny and relaxed and they can have a laugh and they can be playful and they're not so serious and not so stuck, that's got to help everybody else's energy, hasn't it? Because you're actually exuding, you're lightening the stress. At the very time you need people to de-stress, you can't add to the stress sometimes by getting more serious and I'm going to sort this out. Sometimes you need people to recognize the absurdity. You need people to just lighten up and get you to laugh at yourself, chill out, calm, and sort of see a bigger perspective. So I really believe philosophy, having different philosophies and understanding some philosophy, can help you with that, seeing the bigger picture and things like that, can almost help you sort of go, what are you doing? Like, you know, sometimes, again, I'll be in the middle of the night, I'll be with Leo, he's crying, and I can be like, oh my God, this is... And then I just go, hang on a minute, this isn't only going to last for 2 years. He's cuddling you, you're cuddling him. And he's not ill, and he's not like, you know, and this is part of life. You've signed up for it. So just some of those philosophical thoughts make the whole thing, or just surrender, and just make it all miles more easier and a lot less stressful. And I think that's the step forward in coaching. If you've got a coach that's around and they can de-stress the atmosphere rather than adding to it, I think that's such a magical thing that a great coach does, that when everybody else is, you know, the shit's hitting the fan, even though they're very concerned by the results and it really matters, they actually can go the other way. And rather than adding, they can take out stress and help you get back, you know, give you some time off or something, or tell you to go and relax.
For me, this paradigm would suggest that the biology comes first. So by having your biology in a good place, like Nietzsche was alluding to, you're going to be way more open to, for example, thinking, oh, who's that Simone de Beauvoir that these two idiots keep talking about on this podcast? I'm going to go and read that book. That requires you to have essentially spare energy, doesn't it, to commit to that? Because if you're in a state where your organism, so your body is going, Jesus wept, we're absolutely... we're under the cosh here. I've got stress hormones flooding the system. And you see it, for example, female athletes, you get like the female athlete triad, don't you, where the kind of menstrual cycle switches off and all that. That's because the body's going, we are in like emergency situation here. So anything non-essential just gets relegated. Just, it's not a priority anymore. The organism has to preserve itself, essentially. So any energy that you've got and, you know, any nutrition that you've got coming in, vitamins, minerals, all this stuff has to go to, well, what's the priority? It's almost like triage. So the body's going, right, I need to keep my brain on baseline. I need to keep my heart going. My liver needs to be doing this. So any energy is going to that. So stuff like you just going and reading a book or doing some research on what Nietzsche thought about, that is nowhere near a priority. So you wouldn't even consider doing it. I see it with my mum. If I sent her an article or something to read, there is zero chance she'll read. She'll go, I haven't got time. It's just like that. Oh, everything's so effortful. I haven't got time for that. Why am I going to spend my time reading that? And it's not because she's an idiot or she's just because she generally just doesn't have the resources to commit to it. And you know, the physical signs that I maybe alluded to a little bit, when your hair starts thinning, I'm thinking like with my mum, I'm always cold. Hands and feet are always freezing cold. Dead cut, everything's just cold. Skin just doesn't start looking as rosy and that kind of thing. You know, your nails are getting out. They're again, little baseline things that you don't need them to survive. So your body just doesn't prioritize them.
Right. Don't have that.
Yeah, it needs that energy elsewhere. And I think that paper really was getting at thinking is a massive part of that. So it's all right for us to go, there's just too much misinformation everywhere. People need to be more critical in the thinking. They need to be reflecting on what they do. It's like, yeah, that's all well and good. And it's easy to say that and give examples of it and show how to do it. But if you've not got the energy to commit to it, it's never going to happen.
And you know, so what you first got into this and Dr. Ray Peat, didn't you, and looking at the metabolic stuff and on a way and a lot deeper than what we're talking, but just allude to the nutrition part of it, because you got into this training, didn't you, and you went through a phase where you were doing weights and things and eating this and that and drinking this and that to make yourself look like you were on the front cover of Fit Health Man magazine.
That was the thing.
You malfunctioned and you looked into it. What's that story?
Yeah, so ironically, I was doing a load of stuff in the name of health, so thinking, oh, this is like a healthy way to live and be. And I ended up just ruining myself with things like really low carb diet, like carnivore diet at one point, like zero carbs, loads of fasting. So I'd do like 24-hour, 36-hour fasts where I just wouldn't eat anything for that long, thinking, oh, it's good for you. It's good. This is how we used to be. Like, you never had food all the time. Like, you would have to go and hunt an animal. So like, all these things that I would do.
Yeah, it was popular a few years ago, fasting,
really intense exercise, intense weight sessions, you know, every day pretty much, just battering myself, like, again, fasted. So I'd get up on a morning, first thing I'd do is start smashing out like some chin-ups to failure and stuff like that before you've even taken any food on board. And that's after probably I maybe only had one meal the day before. And it was a big learning curve because I got in really good shape, what people would think is good shape. You know, I was ripped. You know, I had like 6-pack, 8-pack. I looked good in the mirror, but I felt horrific, like absolutely horrific. And that's what led me, you know, down this route, looking into.
And your hands and feet were cold and you were obviously going to work. And did that also then affect, obviously, your physiology? You can feel it in your body and sleeping and so on. Did it affect your, did you think you were getting like a psychological hit off it? Do you think the backup system, you know, when you're doing your pull-ups and you know, like when you fasted, I know one of the arguments has been that you feel like you've dominated yourself. I've overcome my instincts there to eat. So I am the superior person because I can stick to this diet and I can fast and I can, and I know that some of that's good. You do have to, you know, you do have to condition yourself and have little limits to your passions and just eating whatever you want to eat. But do you think that's part of the metabolic thing as well? It's like, I know I heard Roy Keane saying that towards the middle end of his career, he copied Ryan Giggs and went to Italy and tried to eat like the Italians and Mediterranean diet and it'll prolong your career. Came back, he said he couldn't tackle. He dropped body weight, body fat, and then after a year, he just was like, his mate said to him, you look like a skeleton, what are you doing? He said, I don't know. And he went, I'm from Ireland, I eat potatoes, I eat puddings, I eat, you know, he said, I was having fish and salad at home and all the life, and the kids were having lasagna and chips. And I should have just carried on eating all that. What was I doing? He said, but your brain, you get carried away with it, obsessed with trying to like battle your natural instincts to overcome them as some form of discipline. I think that goes on a bit in the modern way.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of that self-flagellation is a big part of the culture at the minute. You know, like I say, not eating, intense exercise. Thing is big at the minute, isn't you? Like Wim Hof and all that cold plunging and that stuff. That's all to do with, you know, no one's feeling good doing that, you know, the thought of it. It feels good immediately after, like the intense exercise does while you're fasting, because you jack your stress hormones up, and in the short term, that feels good. You get a buzz and you're like, oh, this must be good because I feel good. But eventually that system can't keep going forever and it starts breaking down, which I did to myself. But I think it is in the culture that it's popular that because everything's so abundant now, in the environment that we're in, you can get anything you want delivered to your door within, you know, half a day. Mm. People expect that now, don't they? We don't ever have to go and hunt for our food or work really for things like that anymore. And I think that's maybe the reaction that people are trying to, I think they're trying to tune back into what they think would be a bit more of an instinctive way of being as humans, maybe. And that's part of it, you know, that self-restriction. Even though we don't need to restrict now, the environment would have done that for you back in the day. But we overcome that with technology and agriculture and all these different things that we've been brilliant at inventing.
So do you think, like, obviously, that life's, you could argue that life's busier. We did the century of the self, didn't we, where you think of yourself as an important person and you get one life and go for it and all that. That's cool, you know. And there's a lot of pressure now, isn't there, to PR your life and look like you've got it all together and you've got to keep up with the Joneses and you don't want to slide off the bottom of the scale. You've got to stay up, you know, particularly in societies in the West, you know, like the middle seems to have gone a little bit. So you have to either be rich and up there and successful or you're down there. So you can understand why people are like, you know, they have to be on it and the money has to be coming in and the CV has to be built and the social status has to remain high and the Instagram pictures and the PRing of their life and everything has to look good. Do you think people are just knackered then? Are we not getting enough like plod and enough basic rest to you know, like and eating, you know, do we have to try and set up our lives so that we can not like go back to lockdown states, you know, like where everyone got to you know, well, not everyone, you know, if you had kids and things, but just relaxed. Do you think it's important that you start to realise that you need to rest and find times to really rest and conserve your energy?
I think it's a bigger issue than that. So for me, what the bioenergetic view, a key part of that would be that we're all, you know, you're an organism. And your organism is always going to be a part of an environment. You can't separate the two. You're always going to be in a particular environment. And I just think now, the modern day, the environment is pretty horrific for us as organisms, you know, the environment that we've created. If you think just things like, you know, diet's clearly an easy thing to look at and talk about, but so the food supply, you know, industrial food supply now, it's just absolute carnage for metabolic health. The stuff, the diets that people are eating, largely because of industrialization, are just horrific. But then you think of things like the water supply that we've got now is compared to how it would have been even 500 years ago. Plastics, pesticides, the amount of chemicals that we've just got in our environment now, everywhere from the furniture to the, you know, the stuff that people are slapping on the skin, the amount of drugs that people are taking, the amount of people who are on 3, 4, 5, 6 medications just to get through the day, a lot of which is covering up for the symptoms of poor metabolic health. There's a drug for that, so that everyone's on drugs. The stress of things like, you know, like EMFs and stuff in the...
What's EMF?
Like electromagnetic frequencies through Wi-Fi and your phone constantly held to your ear and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Lack of sleep, like you've alluded to. You're living in an environment now where, you know, this time of year, it's getting dark at 6, half 6, 7 o'clock. Whereas we've got constant light 24/7 pretty much been pumped into us. So that affects your mitochondria and, you know, the type of light that you're exposed to. A big thing that I think is a... It's almost like a cause and a symptom. So we've talked about that digitization of society. Everything is measured and monitored and digitized to the finite degree. Now, I think if you're in a poor metabolic state, that stuff appeals because you can almost outsource your decision making to an app or your watch or, you know, a good example is calorie counting. People don't really eat off intuition anymore. It's like, well, how many calories have I got? And they're putting it into an app and everything's broken down and it's totally devoid of that lived experience.
Yeah.
Everything's numbers and ratings. And I think that computerization of just what it is to be a human being, it's huge because of the technology, obviously, but everything is outsourced to a machine and we're almost been coached, if you think, by the environment to be like robots, to be routine, to be predictable.
I did 12,000 steps today. I can have a piece of cake now.
Yeah.
Like that type of thinking.
But if you think with social media and stuff, you know, the way that advertising works, everything is built on basically monitoring what we do and how we do it so that we can then be more predictable, so that we can be marketed to and advertised to and controlled in a way. You know, the more that we're robotic in our way of living, the more we can be controlled in a sense.
Mm.
You know, you don't want people, you almost start getting conspiracy theorists, but you get a society where things like creativity, curiosity, critical thinking, being quite philosophical about life, that's not going to happen with the way the environment's going. You're not incentivized to be that way.
So you're incentivized to have a basically a low bioenergetic state. So you don't think too much, you know, beyond, because that'd be too much effort and energy. It'd be too painful because you'd realize that you were a bit in a hamster wheel, bad faith situation that we've talked about. So it's so much easier to kind of go, well, I'm never paying my mortgage off and I'm never going to do this and I need my, so I'm just going to shut down and basically get through and be a good person and shut down, get through, that's fine. I see this in sports as well at times. You know, when Sartre did say about we do things in bad faith, in other words, you go into robot mode, autopilot mode, and don't think why you do what you do every day. At the end of my PhD, I said, well, I felt that one of the important things was that you had to consider why you were doing what you were doing every day and take part, actively, mentally take part in, why am I eating this today? Why am I sat on this train going to work? Do I need to be doing? Hey, I do, because I need to do this and I need to do that. And this, you know, like an athlete's what I see sometimes, they sort of switch off. They go, I'm a pro golfer, a pro squash player, I'm a swimmer. So all I've got to do is find the, you know, 10 things you do them, and then results will come. They almost blindly put their faith into other people to get them to, and they forget that they've got choices and that they're a person, and they don't say no to things. I sometimes say to them, go and eat, just eat some ice cream. Do you like ice cream? Yeah, I love it. Well, eat it. I can't. And you can hear them like, oh, I'd love to, but, you know, I might put a little bit of weight on and it's not in my plan. They've lost that ability to sort of, not all of them, but I think you have to be able to hold your own counsel and take part in your own choices a lot. But as you say, if you're in a low energetic state, which a lot of athletes are, it's easier to switch off and outsource your decisions.
Yeah, well, like life becomes risky. Life itself, just living, it feels risky. So people, I think, start doing as much as they can to avoid risk. Now, you know, the people you work with in sport, risk is inherent in like improving and getting better. And, you know, I know there's obviously hard work and everything that goes, but you've got to take a risk. You've got to be willing to put yourself out there. You've got to be willing to, I might play this match and get hammered and I'm going to look like a right idiot in front of my mates and I spent all this work doing this and what if I get beat? It's a risk, isn't it, to compete?
Or risk in your own mind, risk having 2 days rest when everybody said you should train because I feel like I need to go for a walk on the beach with my dog rather than do another gym session.
Yeah.
That's being in tune with yourself and knowing yourself, isn't it? You know yourself, you're in tune and you sort of start to hold on. I know what makes me tick and I know that this food has been okay for me. It could be anything. It could be having a little drink. It's not avoiding everything at all costs, or I can never use an app, or I can never watch telly, or I can't have any blue light. It's literally being in touch with your own energy, your own sense of buoyancy and your own glow, looking at yourself in the mirror, thinking, I need that now for a couple of days, or I need to get back on this food because I've just had a little bit too much of that. It's not being strict. It's this constant participation and aliveness in your, in a way, like, where are my energy levels at? If you put yourself into a a situation where it's really hard to do that. You've five kids, you've no money, you can't help it, really. You can do try, but you're still going to be in very low energetic mode because you've had five children and you've no money. But when I see people who could know better and could design their lives and change their lives at critical junctions, like when they have a moment of realization, saying like COVID in lockdown or summer holidays, it's amazing to me the amount of people that kind of go, yeah, I'm feeling it, I'm feeling it, I'm feeling it, and then just go, nah, and just go straight back on the hamster wheel. So there is a part of this that's not your fault, but there's a part of this that is your fault, you know, and you can do something about it, usually.
Well, I think that would be part of it as well. It is that convinced, it's like learned helplessness. A part of that hibernation state that I mentioned, it's learned helplessness that you see in, you know, all sorts of different studies where you just think, you convince yourself that you can't, it's not your fault, it's back to Heidegger's thrownness. You just, it's not my fault, I was thrown into this, I can't do anything about it, I can't control this, this has happened to me, I'm just unlucky. That is part of that learned helplessness state, which for me is that low metabolic function. You're not going to go, right, sod this, this is crap, this, I'm not enjoying my job, I don't like the way this is happening, that's doing my head in, I'm going to do something about this. That needs that level of proactivity and having a bit of agency requires energy to say, right, I'm just to even think that you're struggling with something, let alone to do anything about it. Otherwise, if you're just in that blob state, the world acts on you, doesn't it? Like you've mentioned a few times, rather than you acting on the world.
Yeah, because easy to talk, but talk doesn't cook rice.
Exactly, yeah, your favourite quote. I don't want to start belittling things like mental health and stuff, but a lot of depression and that apathy for life and all those things, that for me is metabolic. It's not, you know, there's clearly going to be people with hardcore issues.
Of course.
But I think a lot of people who are like, oh, I'm depressed, they're easy to use that word, I'm depressed. They just get that apathetic, oh, life's crap, everything's rubbish. You know, that we've mentioned nihilism in the past, they creep yeah. into those nihilistic attitudes a little bit. That for me is, you need some energy to just get you like
yeah.
to a point where you can start seeing possibilities and seeing different alternatives.
Children they might be wonky in different ways. Children, obviously, you know, lots of different sort of personalities, isn't there, and levels of maturity. But children up to 4 years old don't generally get depressed if they've been generally loved. They're full of energy, aren't they?
The world is their oyster. Literally, it's like every day, every minute, every hour is like, this is brilliant. Like everything's just like in the world, and everything's about abundance and 100 mile an hour. And then you crash and you have a nap and then you go 100 mile an hour again. And it's all driven by that really efficient thyroid-driven metabolism.
To clear that, your thyroid, I hear a lot of people, they go really ill quick or lose weight really fast or put weight on. And they go, oh, it was a weird, I mean, thyroid or something, hyperthyroid or low thyroid. Like, where is your thyroid and what does it do?
Well, usually people... I actually think we put it in that paper. I think it's something like the third most prescribed drug is thyroid medication, certainly in America. And that's usually hypothyroidism. So being hypothyroid with an O means that you're not producing enough thyroid hormone, essentially. And thyroid hormone is a big driver of that oxidative metabolism that we talked about.
It's the oil that greases the engine, really.
In a way, yeah. It's a hormone. Yeah, think of it like that. But most people are in that hypothyroid state. So classic symptoms of hypothyroidism, usually it's weight gain. And you'll see that, you know, where people have like that enlarged neck and chin, you'll kind of see that a little bit. But it's really low resting heart rate, which is chronic in athletes. Let's be honest, they've got really low resting heart rate, really cold hands and feet, and just general body temperature, because your metabolic furnace just isn't creating enough. You know, a byproduct of energy production is heat. So if you've got a really, you feel cold all the time, even though everyone else is really warm and got a t-shirt on, and you're there with three jumpers, that could be linked to that. Just that chronic fatigue, you know, binging, like food binges, where you'll go from like no appetite to just ravenous appetite, and you'll binge on a load of crap. Hair loss, like I mentioned, that a big thing you'll see, you walk down any high street now, especially in men, you'll see that classic kind of skinny fat physique. So they'll have a really big gut, but the limbs will be really slim and skinny, like, you know, no muscle, basically. Everything's just like skin and bone and then this big enlarged belly. That skinny fatness, I think, is part of it. And, you know, things like constipation, all these signs and signals that the organism isn't in a good place. You know, you're not functioning well. And then if you align it to that, some of the things we talk about in that paper. So if you find yourself with a desire for certainty, where you're going, I just want someone to tell me what to do. Just give me an answer. And we've seen loads of this in the last 2 years, lockdowns and stuff like that, and all the COVID stuff. There's been a hell of a lot of people, I think, have struggled with the uncertainty of what was happening, because it was, you know, such a big life event. You know, the way of life has been massively impacted, and people were just screaming out for certainty when the scientists are all going, well, you know, the scientists suggesting this, but that's changing and this and that. And people just want, wait, this is maybe where you get like dictators and stuff emerging, isn't it? Because they just want someone to be that big, bold leader who's going to go, right, come with me, I'm going to sort this out.
Follow me, done.
Follow me. And people love that kind of, you know, enigma to follow. And I think we've seen loads of that. If people are maybe resistant to change, if you find yourself subservient to authority, so if you're like really scared of your boss at work, or you I don't want to say that in case they like shout at me, or, you know, that subservience, that's the classic sign for me of,
so you'd go off with stress before you'd say anything. Go, you made me do all that, and I couldn't say. Rather than if you're abundantly energetic, you'd be going, no, I ain't doing that, because that's not good for me. If I go down that road, you're not getting this, so sort it out. Because you're like, even if you sack me, in a way, I've got other things I can be doing in my world, because I'm made up full of energy. Yeah, I think for a lot of people I see, they do get to a point of no return. It's hard for them to ever get that level back. And what I also think is interesting is, and this is linked to Sartre's thing again about why you do what you do and putting bad faith into goals. I think a lot of people think, well, when I'm a millionaire, or when I've paid my mortgage, or when I've won the world championships, or when we're Premier League champions, my team, or when, you know, I've had that holiday or that wedding, then everything will be great. But it won't be, because you've still got to get up the day after and deal with your natural and metabolic energy. Your body don't care. Your body's going, fine, yeah, good for you. But where's my energy today? And if you delude yourself and think that one day when this happens, so in a funny way, I think that simple thought of that one day when, you know, even when I go to heaven, even, or all these other, you know, if you think religion, that is another way of like simplifying everything down, isn't it? It'll be all worth it when I'm a millionaire. Or it'll be all worth it when I've become world champion. And it's like, no, because in the meantime, you're going through like a metabolic hell, an illness that you might not get back from. You know, maybe the lottery wins one, isn't it? You play the lottery every week and it just makes you weirdly think, well, I can keep up with this because I might win on Saturday and everything will be fine. But it won't be fine for that person. How many times do you see that? They win the lottery and something happens and then they're still upset and depressed. You see a lot with athletes who've achieved loads in sports. They retire and they're miserable.
Well, part of that cycle is habits feel safe, don't they? Familiarity feels safe. So it's like, well, I'll keep putting that on and one day it might come. That feels safe. Maslow referred to it in, I can't remember if it was one of his books or a paper that he wrote. Everyone's familiar with Maslow's hierarchy, aren't they? And he says you've basically got two. He's like, people can move forward into growth or step back into safety. Now, when you're in that low metabolic state, again, you crave safety. You crave answers and just simple, you know, instructions. You're not going to move forward into that growth. So again, I think that's maybe why habits, you hear it, the habit of a lifetime, don't you? That's safe. It's familiar. It feels comfortable. There's less risk involved in it. So you're not going to step out of it.
Which that can be a good thing, because it doesn't take a lot of energy. But that doesn't mean everything you do should be in that state, because then it's a bad thing. You should still have elements. You know that we've always said it, haven't we? Especially in the early podcasts, Sartre's, I am what I am and I am what I am not yet. You don't want to be too far, I am my potential self. In other words, I'm constantly what I am not yet when I get there. But you also don't want to be too much, well, I am what I am and that's it. So it's working those balances with everything, isn't it? And tuning in. Do I need a, you know, like myself, my study finished and I've taken on a new job, a part-time new job that's not very long, to be honest. But for me, I know it's going to stretch me and intrigue me, and it's set me off on a new path. I now don't want to take on anything else much, because it's like, no, that is enough, Danny, because before you know it, you're not going to be functioning well at these other bits that you do. It'll be too much and you'll just go off the rails. So I have to say no to a lot of things and cut back on certain things that aren't really causing me any problems, but I have to go, no, for my own optimal functioning, I know I can't do all of it.
But even that initial question, so when someone comes to you with an opportunity, is your initial thing excitement? And you think, oh, that could be it. And you look at it with an abundant mindset of that's quite exciting. Or someone in a similar position, does it seem a threat straight away? So your initial reaction is, oh no, it's a lot of time involved in that. I don't think I can do this because I've got this. It's simple. It's the same question, but just your initial. And it's not to say that you should do it, but you immediately look at it with an open mind rather than a threatening, it's going to take from me rather than I'm going to benefit from it kind of thing.
It's interesting when I work with players, I kind of, you know, obviously you've talked to me about this a lot and we're going over it a lot. I'm asking questions to help the listeners, but it's definitely affected the way I help players and talk to them, because when I know that they're going through a bad patch, you know, and life's just not flowing and they're just not, it's sport, it could be anything. You could be technically off, physically off, your opponents could just be in a great place at this moment in time, bad draws, bit of bad luck. And you feel, when you're living it, that you can't see the wood for the trees. You're like, oh my God, worst season ever. I'm not doing well. I don't know where my next win's coming from. Confidence goes. And you get in a bit of a rut. And what it's helped me with is to like not add to that with them when they're in a rut. It's almost leave them alone and don't try and push them to be, they've just got to ride it out. And if they keep losing, just write it off. Whereas I think common sense, common books and psychology is no. And I used to be more like this. You can get back on the horse now, get it fixed, you know, be very pragmatic, get it fixed. You know, every champion never quits and a quitter never wins and a quitter, and all the sayings come out. And I think for me, it's like, no, firstly, I'm getting bad vibes here on your energy states. You need to go home, see your dog, see your mum, see your friends, eat some foods from your town. Remember what life's about. Get you sleep in your own bed. Don't be going extra training. Let it emerge back. And sometimes that time out, that rest, then they get creative with it. They go, you know what, Danny, I've looked back at that now and I just wasn't fit. And you go, yeah, I thought that. Yeah, it's fine, there isn't a problem. And then when they're ready and they're abundant, they come up with the creative ideas and they start fixing their own game again. And then all of a sudden, like a kid, they're back in love with the game because they've got the energy to do it. And the brain can cope with potential possibilities. So the brain can go, I could be that good. But what it is, they can cope with the work they know it's going to take. And I've got that with a player right now. He's really come back to this season. He's got a new leader. He's doing great. Bit of a bad year last year. I know him really well. I just couldn't push him and just let it drift. Have a summer, comes back to it, new coach, couple of new things, and he's like a different person. His eyes are good. He's playing loads of squash, loads of tournaments, playing great. And I'm convinced it's all to do with his metabolic health.
You know, you said about how you pick up a vibe off a player and you can just tell there's a bad vibe.
Yeah.
A good rule of thumb I've noticed, you know, when you're out and about, just note how dogs approach you. When you're in a good state and you're feeling energetic and you've got that vibe going, animals pick up on it massive. You'll see that they'll come running up to you.
Brilliant.
I genuinely think they pick up on that vibe of this is a healthy person. They've got good energy. They're open. I'm going to go and see them. And you'll maybe notice when you're not. So you maybe had a stressful couple of weeks and you've got, you know, you're not maybe slept as much. And you'll see that dogs, they maybe just give you a bit of a wider berth sometimes. Sounds weird, but I've noticed that.
That's really interesting, yeah.
Do you think there's a vibe element you can pick up on? Someone, even if you walk into a room crowded, you'll get a vibe for who's
yes
emitting that kind of energy into the environment.
It is hard, you know, because you do get these energy sappers, don't you? You know, the ones that I feel that a lot. I'm naturally that's my personality anyway, and I think knowing myself, and I tend to do things and bring some energy to the room.
I don't mean in like an extroversion way, though. I don't mean the person who's...
No!
Sometimes it goes the other way. You can tell they're acting and they're just being that. Even like someone who's really quiet and in, you can just get a good vibe from them. That.
Oh, yeah. You can listen to a good spiritual teacher who's quiet and they're just exuding energy around them, aren't they? You just get different types of people, you know. And yeah, it's definitely not to do with the act you're putting on the show. But it is something you tap into, and how they look. You do get tired. I know when I'm like, whoa, they took a lot from me today. And then I won't continue to work with them if that's the deal. They have to bring something to the party. And if they can't, I just can't be with them that much because you don't get that energy back. It's like anything, isn't it? It's two-way energy. Energy goes to energy. So it's with some people, you know, it doesn't, they just take. And it, in the end, you don't fall out with them, but it's just not a good buzz. That doesn't mean that in, say, a month or a year, they might have some energy back and then you hit it off again and you reconnect. But just to finish, you know, I better conclude it. It did simple things that you could, like one thing I learned from metabolic diet, for example, was don't have margarine, have butter. You know, that was a simple one in the food thing. Kate Deering's book about metabolic diet was quite interesting. Again, not a strict diet. You don't get any diet set, but just suggestions and things you can do. Having a bit of sugar with your coffee rather than just black coffee, have it with milk and sugar so it's got the fats to think. That helps your thyroid and helps you a bit better than just black coffee. Are there anything, you know, like you told me not to drink as much water, you know, like just drink when you're thirsty. Are there any other little simple, tiny little quick things we could do, like, I'm not going to change everything, but they're just a useful thing.
I think the biggest one that certainly people like Ray Pete and people in this approach talk about, the biggest one that, or the most impactful thing you can do is get less polyunsaturated fats. So what they call like the poofers, so things like vegetable oils. That's one of the biggest negative impacts on metabolic function. So that cellular energy creation, the polyunsaturated fats are just a disaster for that. Big thing for them is even if you did nothing else, if you're someone who eats a lot of fried takeaway food, for example, that will all be fried in poofers.
Right. If you're looking at like loads of crisps and things like that.
Anything that's, like I mentioned, industrial food, basically poofer is just endemic in the industrial food supply now because it's cheap and it's readily available and it's just a horrendous substance that really gunks up the gears, basically, in your mitochondria, and it has really quite negative health outcomes for metabolic function. So that's probably the easiest quick win that people can do. Maybe just
food labels and looking at polyunsaturated fats, get rid of them as well. For cooking at home, be able to do that more, wouldn't you? Making your own soups, making, you know, looking at your food labels, cooking from scratch a little bit rather than all these sort of ready meals and all these things.
You mentioned butter there. That's the reason for that. It's that, you know, saturated fats essentially get demonized in the modern culture, but they're way more healthily from a mitochondrial perspective than the polyunsaturated fats that, incidentally, we tend to be told to eat.
Old-fashioned foods then, like,
basically. Yeah, I mean, that's, I would recommend Kate Deering's book. I'll put it as a link into this when we post this episode. Again, not from a dogmatic, right now I'm on this diet and now I'm going to follow what this diet says. I think it's a really good read just to see some of the mechanics of what we've talked about and how, you know, the mitochondria and different foods might impact them and their influence on metabolism. It's good for that. But you're right, if you pretty much just go back to, well, how did your grandparents' parents eat the types of, it would have been proper butter, wouldn't it? It would have been maybe like beef tallow from the beef joint on the weekend. It wouldn't have been some, like, you know, manufactured margarine that's been cobbled together in a factory somewhere. It'd be whole foods. It would be, it's not that it's high or low in fat or high or low in carbs, but it would have been whole foods. So it'd have been fruit. It would have been any grains and that they would have been eating would have been pretty much organic, wouldn't they? You know, homemade breads and stuff like that. Stews.
One thing I remember from it when you told me as well, root vegetables, things that come out of the soil, like parsnips, carrots, potatoes, probably better than the things that, like, are grown, not that they're bad, but above the ground. So try, eat a bit more stuff that comes out of the soil.
And that, yeah, they're way more energy producing, whereas I'm sure a lot of the people that listen to us have probably been down that. I did it myself, you know, the green smoothie. So I'm going to have like a raw kale smoothie with spinach and all this. And it's really low calorie, but it fills you up and it's high fiber. And then you just come away and it's like, God, you feel healthy because it feels quite virtuous, doesn't it? Because it's like, oh, it's green. And it's like, but actually, that's just like hitting your digestive system with a massive issue that then, you know, you can start getting issues from that. So then you don't absorb the nutrients from the other foods that you, so you can get into cycles. But yeah, I would recommend that book, and it's a bit of a hated word, isn't it, but usually moderation's the way to go. Anything at an extreme will get you in trouble at some point.
I love the one with the definitely the ice cream. I eat ice cream whenever I get a headache. Ray Pete said that, didn't he? And I just eat some ice cream. Don't obviously do a full tub, you might do a scoop used to be a teaspoon, just in the freezer, get it out, eat some ice cream, rather than having an headache tablet, unless it's chronic, which I don't tend to get, but I'd always have a tablet. I wouldn't be frightened of having any medication. But first try the ice cream. It's amazing how much it works.
But again, you've got to be thinking, like, what are the ingredients of the ice cream? Is this just like a chemical shitstorm from a factory? Or is it real cream and real, yeah?
And then there's, I get one, like, and it's got four ingredients in it. And I look at the next one, I go, oh, yeah, but that looks good. That can't be bad. That's super deluxe, you know, whatever. Looks, you know, it's very expensive. I look at it, you know, it's from Italy. It's the gelato. It's £8. Got to be better. Come on, you deserve it. I look at it, there's like 30 ingredients in it. I'm like, and I've got this other one, it's got four ingredients, and that's all you need.
Well, I think the name's in the title, isn't it? Ice cream, iced cream. So it was proper cream with some, I think maybe egg yolks, a bit of sugar and milk. Away you go, there's your ice cream.
We're drinking a lot. When Laura was an athlete and everything, she was like, oh, I can't have dairy and can't do this. And rubbish, really. We have like full fat milk, and you have a bit and it fills you up. And again, you know, people have to suck it and see, don't they? They have to work with it. But that kind of thing. I think the other one was a quick one for those of you that maybe are still doing this, is not drink so much water. You used to absolutely cane the water. Like, it was like if you were peeing clear, it was like, yeah, look at that. You could be going toilet all the time, you know, which was annoying, but you'd be like, yeah, but I'm hydrated. And it turns out that's a nightmare as well.
You were nothing if you weren't seen to be carrying your bottle of, like, Volvic or whatever, you know, wherever. you'd I've got a meeting, I better get some water to take to that meeting. You just think about it logically, you're just flushing your system out, really. It's not like in the day where you would drink from a stream and it'd have calcium and magnesium and all different, you know, minerals in there. We're just drinking dead water out of a tap a lot of the time.
Lastly, Laura asked me, we've got a few things there. Let's finish. Laura asked me, because she's done your course, and even though, you know, I've done the course and it's brilliant, and it's on the course, isn't it? It's on the course, the section on bioenergetics. So it's so good. She said, how can you, if you're an athlete and you kind of got to like be really fit, you know what I mean? Like a game like squash or a triathlon or, you know, you know what it's like, you got to be really fit. How can you, and you pretty are by default, stressing your system out. How can you sort of do it as an athlete? Well, one thing you might be like, you know, or as a high performer where, you know, you've got to go to the gym, you've got to put your body through sessions, you've got to smash yourself to the max. What one thing from a metabolic sort of thyroid thing becomes even more important then?
I think it's a tough one, because just by its very nature, elite sport like that is probably one of the most stressful things you can do to yourself as an organism. I think you have to accept it. You have to go, well, I'm committing to this. And you basically have to accept that, I know this isn't, you know, it's contrary to the image that is portrayed in the media, isn't it? That athletes are like these peak physical specimens of health. That was certainly a thing I learned, that peak physical condition is by no means correlated with peak health. That's one thing. So even though you might look good, but I think, yeah, it's a tough one, because you just got to accept that this is in many ways going to be damaging or at least detrimental to my health, and then just try and manage that, I suppose. I mean, Laura seems to have done it pretty well. She's come out the other end.
Yeah.
She's produced a healthy baby, and you know, it's like she's obviously in good health. I think it maybe just depends how long some people go with it.
But I think, you know, would it be things like making sure you eat home cooked foods as much as you can? You know, you are basically a bit doomed being someone who's flat out. But these are the things, then, in a way, they're not promoted as such, but you really do need to rest. You really do need to eat more root vegetables. You really do need to.
If it was me, I would be thinking, right, I'm doing this, I'm going for total nutritional abundance. So I would be considerate of, right, vitamins, minerals, different micronutrients. Because the fact is, you're going to be going through them a lot quicker than you or I would be now, let's say. So I'd be making sure I'm not just hitting kind of what the recommended daily allowance might be. I'd be going, right, I'm going for nutritional abundance, and I'm making sure I'm giving myself the foods that my mitochondria can use to produce energy, which might differ for different people depending on your own metabolism and things that you like and don't like and that kind of stuff. I think Kate Deering, who wrote that book, what used to be a marathon runner, and the reason she got into it was because she ruined herself with marathon.
All the diets and the running and the fads. I just think think there's a sensible, there's, you know, it'd be the same in anything that's high stressed and high pressure. And you know, like you say, you can't escape that environment because you're committed for that part of your life to it. But there are still very sensible things you can do that are informed by your metabolism and your energy states. And I think as a coach and as a, well, for me as a husband as well with Laura, like, because she obviously is dead good at sticking to fats, carbs and proteins, that kind of, as long as her weight was good, she wasn't in a muscle tone. But I was more always concerned with her, like her background energy and things.
Yeah.
I used to say things to her like, you know, the, even the best racehorses and the racehorse trainers know when to put the horses in the field and rest and say, you ain't running this week, pal, because you ain't going to produce. They just have a sensitivity with animals. So I'd used to say, I'd take control and just say, no, you're not training today. You're not doing this. You're going in the field kind of thing. You know, you're eating, I'm making you this food. You're having chips like today, even though it's a poofer. You know, it was just like a mood thing. And then it'd be like, and then you're having more food. You're having a sleep. And also we're going out for a laugh. Going out laughing, and we're going to go and do this and relax and even have a glass of wine and just decompress from it all.
Maybe that would be a recommendation I would have for athletes and coaches, anyone really. And it links, you know, as a finishing point, let's say, to link back to that digitization and that objectifying everything to numbers, being confident enough, whether it's as an athlete, if your training plan is saying this or the coach is saying this, and it's, you know, and it's, but actually that day you're thinking no, because you will sense it in your gut that I've got to do this session today, and I know this is going to break me, this, you know, it's a big hard session. Maybe tuning back into and trusting your gut a little bit more than just, well, this is what the plan says, so that's what I've got to do in today. Because that, again, is, that's an easy way to add a massive amount of stress to an already stressed system, isn't it?
Mark, I know Mark, Laura's trainer, Mark Campbell, brilliant here at English Institute of Sport, he was strength and conditioning guy. If you went in and went, I'm not feeling it, Mark, he go, brilliant, go home, go to bed, go and have a chill out, go see your friends, no problem for me. Because the, so obviously there's the you know, the, it's trendy for the athletes to be like priests, you know, like just disciples of training principles, isn't it? Again, good people, they just,
but that's what Nietzsche was onto in you, you know, tune into what's your body telling you.
It's cleverer than your mind sometimes.
Yeah, that's cleverer than your mind. So don't just intellectualize everything. Don't feel, just tune back into like, what's the vibe? What are you feeling like? And get cognizant with that again, rather than just outside stuff telling you what to be doing and in your mind rationalizing it.
Brilliant. Great. What a good episode.